I thought you were about to start saying welcome, but instead it came up.
I was clearing my throat.
Okay, we're ready. We're rolling. We've been rolling.
Welcome to Mustard AMAs. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
And we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. Movies, videos, by which I mean TV. I'm really out of it.
Video games. A
little bit of tech.
Music. I saw Play this week.
I know you did.
So.
And so last week I was in Portland.
Yeah.
At the Champ Car race.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
It was really interesting. I'd never been to a Champ Car race. I couldn't even tell you much about Champ Car, but basically it's I think it's the, and you'll get arguments over this, the premier American open wheel racing series.
In other words, it's like the double A of F1.
Well, kind of, sort of, but nobody, it's not related to F1 at all.
And no,
I
know.
Champ
I'm just
car
trying
driver
to
might
put it in the thing,
there.
But wouldn't
it's the Ameri- wouldn't, it's the American version of F1.
But IndyCar is different than Champ, right?
Right. That's they used to be one series,
yep.
And they split off, and so Indy or IRL does their own thing, and that's where Danica Patrick races.
Yeah. I would have thought Indy would be, even though Champ might have more race and stuff, I would have thought Indy would be the premier.
And that's really get the argument. It seemed to me from talking with my friends that Champ was the better of the two.
That's what I hear, but... But Indy would clearly be the one everybody knows about, at least just because the race.
The name. And oh. Yeah, so that it could easily be the opposite of what I just said.
So how was it?
It was really interesting. We went down, and like three couples went down, and the guys went to the Saturday races, which are like qualifying and practice, and they've got like three or four different actual race car series.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not, waiting the whole day for one and a half hour race. There's usually stuff going on. And it poured rain.
Nice.
And because the forecast just said showers, I actually wore the jacket I'm currently wearing, which is a really old ski jacket,
mm-hmm.
which I learned at Bumbershoot last year was water resistant, not waterproof, key difference.
In other words, about 18 minutes and then it just
and then
holds
you're like,
that water
why is
in.
My shirt wet?
Yeah.
You realize, oh. So I was not dressed properly for pouring rain, so that made it a little miserable. But they were still racing, and that was interesting. And they kind of, the way they set it up is interesting within the scope of, it's not quite as merchandised as you would think.
Yeah.
Because I was expecting just booths and booths of, buy stuff. And there was some there, but not as much as I thought. Not that many food vendors, really.
It's not quite NASCAR with the merchandising.
Oh, God, no. Not that I've ever been to a NASCAR race, but I would just imagine that every 5 feet, there's an opportunity to buy something with a number on it.
Yeah.
But it was pretty well run, and there was some confusion over, stupid Ticketmaster. The way they sold the tickets online, we all had bought paddock passes, which lets you go on the inside of the field.
Yep.
But the way they were described online, it made it seem like it also was your general admission ticket, but we got there and we realized that no, you had to buy a separate general admission ticket. So we're like, oh, fantastic. Anyway, and then Sunday we were there, and it only sprinkled a little bit, and we saw the big race, and we were standing around in the paddock area, and a guy came out and said, I need 10 or 12 people to go on the grid with the flags and the names of the drivers. And we're like, okay. So
Jesus.
Four of us raised our hands, and so I actually got to that ruckus is Richard's cats running around for whatever reasons cats do. We actually got to go out on the starting grid on the racetrack, and I was holding the flag for driver, I think it was Alex Figge,
mm-hmm.
an American who was towards the back of the grid. But what an interesting experience. I actually kind of felt like the beginning of the Star Wars pod race.
Yeah.
Which is stupid because that was like one little aspect of that movie which didn't count for anything as opposed to actual races. being an F1 fan.
That's still very cool.
Yeah, so that was interesting. I'm told I actually did not get on TV, though, that they didn't broadcast anything from the pits until the start itself.
Yeah, well,
not that I wanted to be on TV, because I'm not an attractive person. I am... when you watch, like, motorcycle races or F1 races, they have really attractive women holding everything. Basically, in motorcycle races, they're called umbrella girls.
Yep.
Because they will actually hold an umbrella over the racer to keep them from overheating because they're wearing this full leather racing suit. And so I was basically the ugliest umbrella girl ever.
Congratulations.
But it was a unique experience. Anyway,
cool.
So that's where I was last weekend.
Cool.
I saw Ocean's 13 this week.
Yeah, what'd you think
of
that?
I had some time.
I had no interest. That last one sucked so bad. Love George Clooney. Love Brad Pitt, Matt Damon. That last one was so disappointing that it just, I had no interest.
It was exactly what everyone is saying in that better than Ocean's 12, not as good as Ocean's 11.
Hmm.
I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was near as inventive as Ocean's 11. At no point did I feel that much invested, like, oh, maybe they're not going to make it, or, oh, this is going to trip them up, like
nothing,
you did in the first one.
Nothing massively stupid, like, oh, it's Julia Roberts,
no,
and she's playing that, or nothing massively stupid, like a completely, truly non-workable solution of having a three-dimensional represent of a hologram of something that everybody in the planet knows doesn't exist and can't exist. Nothing like that.
One thing that was almost as stupid, but not stupid enough to, and only because I watch a lot of Discovery Channel, those mega builders shows and extreme engineering.
Man,
that's like catnip for me. If you watch enough of them, a lot of them have to do with making tunnels. And so you're intimately familiar with tunnel boring machines.
Yeah.
And it's funny because each episode of one of these shows treats it like you've never heard of a tunnel boring machine before. So it's the size of the Empire State Building laid on its end, and it's 40 miles.
Often, when they first put them together, it was a series of independent, basically documentaries that they just laid this thing on, and they all have the same examples, and it gets old after a while.
But and so you become pretty familiar with these tunnel boring machines that take, you know, hundreds of people, like 50 people to run. It takes a large crew.
It's an amazing operation, tons of electricity or whatever they're running it from.
Right, because it's this, you know, it's 30 feet high or whatever it is. I don't actually know, but it's along that scale, and it slowly advances forward, and as it chews through the rock, it spits it out a conveyor system. You know, as it's going, part of this advancing wall of machinery creates an actual concrete tunnel as it goes to prevent it from caving in.
Yeah.
As it advances. It's an incredibly complex system.
So what'd they do in the movie?
They had Don Cheadle's character as the one guy running a tunnel boring machine.
Oh, for God's sake.
And they actually said that it was one of the two that dug the tunnel.
One of the two. Oh,
because then it got stuck or broke, and they had to get the other one that dug from the other direction.
Oh, for God's sakes!
And these things take entire crews of people to get over there and assemble, and months to assemble.
Well, exactly, and then it's like 18 flatbed trucks, and
entire construction crews just to assemble this thing, and then
to me
get it
that
running.
Is the equal of the hologram.
You know, and so this one gets stuck, and they're like, oh, suddenly we need to get another one of these machines. Okay, well, how much is it? Oh, it's $36 million. Oh, okay. And then they solve the money problem, and then before you know it, the next machine is up and running. You know, and you're just like, no, actually, it would take about a year or two, probably.
So this particular job they were doing required a tunnel that was like 30 feet in diameter?
It required to create vibrations to simulate an earthquake.
Oh. And how deep and how long was this tunnel?
They never really specified.
Okay, because those things don't... They're not moving like 100 feet a day.
No.
Okay.
I mean, it's... The only reason you know it was completely retarded is if you had seen these shows and you actually knew about tunnel boring machines. If you didn't know about tunnel boring machines, then it's just a stretch, and you're just like,
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, even without seeing those shows. But then again, I've seen a lot of them, so it's hard to differentiate. But
anyway, aside from that, it was
perfect. But you say it's better than two.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that movie did the best job of dealing with the women that I have ever seen. I'm not saying it's never been done this way before, but I can't remember it. And basically it's the problem of, you know, usually in the first movie, the characters are going after the women. And at the end of the movie, they get the woman.
Yep.
And then you get to a sequel and you're like, what do we do? And so oftentimes they completely ignore the fact that there was a woman in the first one, and they have them go after the woman, a woman in the second one, either go after the first one again because there was some fight in the, you know, and they just redo the same formula. Or it's a completely different woman, like in the Indiana Jones movies. But in the Indiana Jones movies, the going after the woman's always completely secondary.
Yep.
And, excuse me for clearing my throat on mic. That's horribly unprofessional. or that they will, kind of have the woman be around, but in a really unconvincing way. Or in the second movie, they actually had the women be an integral part of the plot and then become a completely stupid part of the plot, as in Ocean's 12.
Yep.
And this one, it was two lines of dialogue in the beginning that basically said, it's a night, I didn't tell them about it. I just said, we're busy. It's not their fight. They're staying home. And so that way, you know, they're still with the women, but they don't have to pay the women's salaries or shoehorn them into the plot.
Well, isn't Ellen Barkin in this?
Yeah, but she's...
She's not one of the women.
No.
Okay.
It was Julia Roberts and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah.
Are, quote-unquote, the women. And I just totally went... I bought into that completely. It's like, you know what? It's not... The movie's not about George Clooney or Brad Pitt trying to get a woman. They've already done that story.
Yeah.
And the way they're dealing with it is just saying, you know what? This doesn't involve them. And so they gave lip service to the fact they still exist. I thought it was brilliant because so many films try and make it more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah.
And that always, always bothers me. And it shouldn't, but it does. Anyway, did you see any movies in the past couple weeks?
Yeah, I have. What the hell did I see?
We're really well prepared.
It was, I saw the Wind That Shakes the Barley.
I heard something about that.
It was, it's a movie, it's by Ken Loach, who's this Great Britain
wasn't
director.
Was that an IRA movie?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And Ken Loach makes, his movies are all about the working class, and some are pretty funny, but they're very, almost documentary feel, and oftentimes you literally cannot understand what they're saying. But I didn't have a problem with this one. It was the birth, essentially, of the not necessarily the IRA, but the Irish war against Britain, and then followed by the Irish Civil War, where the factions that had beat out Britain were fighting for the heart of Ireland or whatever. I thought it was really good. Our friend Mark saw it with me, and he just could not understand what they were saying very much, so he couldn't get into it.
It's interesting how alike you and Mark are.
Yeah.
And yet, how often in terms of movies you'll have completely the opposite reaction?
I would say, with one exception, if he falls asleep through the movie, suddenly it wasn't a good movie. And this was a movie he slept through part of, so it wasn't a good movie. With one exception, I can't remember what it was, but I remember one movie he slept through a good part of it, but still came out loving it. But anyway, it was a great movie. And then other than that, I keep wanting to see movies, but I don't think... You know, we saw Knocked Up a couple weeks ago, but other than that, I don't think I've seen anything.
I never used to fall asleep watching TV or watching... I've never fallen asleep watching a movie. Because I'm usually engaged, you know, I'm with what's going on. Last week, this whole house drama... I actually fell asleep watching TV.
Oh?
I don't know. It was towards the end of something, and I sort of jerk awake, and suddenly Studio 60 was on. What? That was just about the first time that's ever happened to me.
Well, Mark, who I see most of my movies with, he sleeps. I cannot think in the last year a movie hasn't been asleep in.
That is hysterical.
Because invariably we're seeing the 9 o'clock showing,
yeah.
And invariably he's been working all day, I guess. And we saw this play, which we'll talk about in a bit. And sure enough, he slept through part of this. And this is one. This was a theater. There's only like 12 people in the audience.
Oh, shit.
And the actors are 5 feet away from us, and there he is nodding off. You know,
because Mark's over at my house doing some, my new house, doing some drywall work, helping to prep my new TV room.
Yep.
God, I cannot. It's almost going to be a dedicated TV room.
Sweet.
It's going to be brilliant.
Sweet.
Anyway, and he told me you guys saw a play, and the first thing that jumps into my mind was The Cycle from The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I don't remember if that was the name of the play or if that was how he described it, but that landlord...
Yeah, but that was about a million times bigger than this, because that was on an actual theater that could, even though there was only about 20 people in the audience, it could have held 500. This was in a converted space that held, that could have held 25, but held 12. And, yeah, but it's, and the difference between this and The Cycle was, It was a three-person play, and two of the actors were extremely good and did a good job. Not the greatest play in the world, not the worst, but two of the actors were, I would say, as good as I've seen in a play ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then one was just really, really, really bad. And you feel bad because it's entirely volunteer, entirely, they're not making a dime on this whatsoever. But he was just bad, and it kind of took you out of the whole play.
I have been to very, very few plays for whatever reason.
I every once in a while will get a bug and I'll go, and every time I do it, I leave it going, God dang, why don't I go to more of these? I always enjoy them, but you know, and I like little repertory and community plays. Last year I saw one up in Everett. It was like a little, a version of Little Shop of Horrors, which is the musical, and it was great. And this one was great, too. It was funny. The person who was one of the people in this play is called Private Wars, and it was written in 89 about a bunch of guys in a VA hospital that are dealing with psychological trauma kind of thing after Vietnam or whatever. And although I think it was contemporary in 89, I'm not really sure. But anyway, suffice it to say, one of the actors was Mark's barber.
Yeah.
And he was really good. He was just really good. But at certain points in the play, he has to take off his shirt, and the dude's like in incredibly good shape. And you could kind of hear a couple gals in the audience like gasp, and literally could not concentrate there.
Oh,
and even I, the most heterosexual guy I know, well, I mean, as much as anybody, am going, good Lord, dude, I can see why they're gasping. And there he is. He's sort of playing this kind of rube, you know, kind of guy. But he's, in one sense, he's in such good shape that the character could not have possibly been in that good a shape in this play, because he's, because you clearly have to work out to be in as good a shape as this guy is. And this character, his sole focus in life is working on a radio he's trying to fix. But anyway, it was good. I loved sitting in a theater with 20 people and, you know, in little hardback chairs and stuff. And they're doing a version of the Zoo Story, the Edward Albee play, which I read in high school, which I loved, in a month. And I'm definitely going to go see it. $10. It was great. So
buy the In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah, it was buy the In-N-Out Burger. It wasn't quite as, I mean, The Cycle was hilarious, but this was not experimental in form. This was an attempt to do acting.
I'm trying to think of what else movie-wise is going on. God, we're coming up on Transformers.
Yeah, I want to see it, although I hope it doesn't blow chunks. There was a couple things I saw in the trailer that sort of sucked the life out of me.
You said you didn't like the robot sort of skating on its wheels.
It looked awful. I mean, it looked like, first of all, they're robots, and then all of a sudden they're making him like skate like an inline blader kind of person, and you immediately saw that. I could go, oh God, they went and had a here, I gotta throw something at my cat.
Good job.
Dang, wrong cat. They went and had a they clearly, you know, got some guy on rollerblades, and they clearly did the dots in the computer and did the motion capture. And I'm thinking, I don't want to see that. I know the Transformers and the robots are all, you know, for some, you know, pretty smooth operating, but I want them to feel a little clunkier and a little bit more hard. And seeing them just that skating, it just immediately sucked it right out of me, you know. But who knows how it'll be or what it'll do.
Let's see, what else is going on?
But all the big summer movies, I haven't seen like a one of them that I can think of, except for if you called Knocked Up a big summer movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen Pirates yet.
Silver Surfer came out and made $60 million this weekend, which is interesting.
I went ahead and read Harry's review on Ain't It Cool News, just because I still hadn't heard anything about how they were dealing with Galactus, which I think, as we've discussed in the past, you know, Silver Surfer and the Fantastic Four, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, and Galactus, who's basically who the Silver Surfer works for, or did at that time, is this incredibly 60s era looking fantastical. I mean, he's got this gigantic purple and blue helmet, which it's, you know, you kind of accept it on the comics page, but if you were to see that in a serious movie,
it'd look ridiculous.
It could look incredibly ridiculous if they just did a direct translation. But apparently he doesn't appear in the film. He's sort of an off-screen presence, which, you know, I can understand.
Another way to save money.
To save money, or to say, you know, how do you portray what's supposed to be a big guy who eats worlds? It's really hard to do. How do you translate that at all?
Yeah.
And so I don't begrudge them the fact they chose to, you know, not, because I don't know how I would have done it.
Well, I'm kind of looking forward to it, because I have very low expectations, and the last movie I liked on its own level. It wasn't the greatest thing, but it seemed like to have, for the most part, the right tone. A lot of people didn't like the tone because they're into this more serious stuff, but the Fantastic Four, they're sort of like a early 60s kind of thing to me, and the tone, it seemed to me they struck it pretty right, although, and I love Michael Chiklis, but the dude's like 5'4". And for some reason, the thing, and I know they do their best in there, but it's like a little midget thing, you know, kind of. And
5'4".
Yeah, oh, he's like, I think at the most he's like 5'6".
Yeah, I have a digression when you're done with your thought.
So it just, anyway, that said, I love Michael Chiklis, and I kind of like the last one, and by all accounts, this one is no great shakes, but better than the last one, and kind of keeps going in the same tone. And I'm thinking, well, that's cool. I'll see that. I probably won't see it in the theater, but I'll see it on the DVD.
The Larry Sanders Show, there was a, I can't remember if it was the actual episode that dealt with the quality of the guests they were getting, or if it was a subplot to another episode, but they were talking about, and they were bitching about having the commish, which was Michael Chiklis before The Shield.
Yep.
It was like, we've got the Michael Chiklis, the commish. And the response, I can't remember if it was Larry or Artie saying, who the F is the commish? Yeah. Exactly. And there was some joke about, like, getting the commish as a guest and how that was kind of, that was a joke. And now he plays this hardcore.
Well, it was funny when he first did that, The Shield, and they said it was Michael Chiklis. It was, everybody thought, oh my God, the commish represented everything you hate about drama. It's like the JAG school of drama, which is this whole overbearing, stupid, treacly, melodramatic, and he represented everything bad about it. And the weird thing was, is he was actually young, but he looked like he was in his 40s, so he could play the commish, but he was in his 20s when he was playing that. But because of the way he looked, because he was overweight and balding and stuff. Well, when The Shield came out and that first episode came out, I mean, remember, that first year, this was like a basic cable series, and he won the Emmy for Best Actor in that show because it was so transformative for the guy. But I was in the same boat as Larry Sanders. The commish, I'd flip past it and get angry. And then I found out my brother would TiVo the show, and just instantly, you know, I was like, oh no, you got to be kidding me. It was awful. I mean, this was in the early days of TiVo, and he would TiVo the thing. But anyway, maybe it was even prior to that, but I know he used to watch it. But anyway, so I had the same reaction, but he's totally changed. It just goes to show why. Sometimes they'll put an actor in some role and you go, oh my God, what are they doing? And then other times, you know, they prove them right. Quentin Tarantino's, you know, been great for that. I mean, when Pulp Fiction came out, John Travolta had a very clear image in people's minds, and it was just awful. And that movie changed everything, and the Shield changed everything for Chiklis, and the Fantastic Four is bringing them right back in commish territory. So
they released the list of movies that will have a presence at San Diego's Comic-Con.
Oh yeah, what do they have? Are you going?
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought we had discussed.
I can't remember. I know you go a lot of times. I don't know if you're going this
I've
year.
Been once.
I thought you got. What was the other one you went to?
I'm going to the Seattle one.
Okay.
I've been that one 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
No, so, and I was getting a little, not quite down, but a little like, wow, there's not a whole lot special going on this year at San Diego. But then I saw the movie list, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Stuff like Indiana Jones 4,
yep.
Iron Man, which we've already had our Iron Man discussion
yep.
before. Stardust.
Looks great, and then you realize who's directing it, and of course it's going to suck. Stardust.
That's Richard's
opinion. Stardust looks very exciting.
That's Richard's opinion about Favreau. I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. Anyway, Stardust.
I'm not. I refuse to.
I understand. Unfortunately, the Stardust presentation is Wednesday night, and we're not flying into late Wednesday night, so I'm going to miss that presentation, which sucks, because I'm really looking forward to that film. I completely forgotten that Matthew Vaughn was the director.
Yep.
Who did Layer Cake.
Yeah, that's what was so cool about it.
And Neil Gaiman's doing interviews promoting Stardust now, and he was talking about sort of the process of how that... came to be. And it was really interesting in terms of, I think somebody like... the Weinsteins had the option, and then they spent the 2 years they had the option pursuing one specific deal with another studio.
Yep.
And it didn't happen. And then Neil got the rights back, and he said, and it took great delight in saying no to people.
Yeah.
And finally, he got to be friends with Matthew Vaughn because they worked on another short film together called, I think, 20 Short Stories About John Bolton.
Yeah.
Which was an experiment.
About John Bolton.
I.
There's a famous one about Glenn Gould. 20 short stories about Glenn Gould, and that's obviously a riff on that. That's where the Simpsons thing came, 20 short stories about Springfield or whatever.
22.
Yeah, you're right. You're
anyway.
Right.
It was, which, and that in itself was an experiment that Neil Gaiman did to see if he had any directing ability.
Did he direct Mirror Mask? Who directed Mirror Mask?
It was, I believe Dave McKean directed
it. Oh, that's right. And then Gaiman wrote, yeah, okay.
So, because he... he once had interesting experiences trying to get his own projects made.
Yep.
And he's probably going to direct Death, which was one of his projects. But before he took that on, he wanted to see if he had any skill doing it. So he did this short story thing, which Matthew Vaughn helped him on.
Yep.
So I guess they're friends between that. And Matthew Vaughn's wife read the Stardust book, and they got him interested, and he said, well, what if I did this? And Neil Gaiman said, and then I did something you're never, ever, ever supposed to do, kids. I gave him a free option. So, wow. And that was after he dropped out of X-Men 3 because he just could smell disaster coming, even though it ended up not being a disaster.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. Vaughn's been bouncing around, and it was sort of like he had these big projects, and then they drop or whatever, so it's kind of cool he's landing on his feet with this.
Anyway, this one sounds good. There's some early good buzz about it, about Stardust. What else is going on? Golden Compass, which I know, all I know about that is it's got Nicole Kidman.
It's supposedly some fantasy series, the beginning of a fantasy series, and I usually with those things... don't you have to have heard about the series for it to make any difference?
I'm told by one of my bosses at work that it's a great series.
No, it may be, but again, this is that's the classic case of me going, because I haven't heard about it, it must not be popular. But I'm generally aware of these things. So
I have not heard about it either.
And so maybe it's great, but it's pretty much, it sounds like, going to have to stand entirely on its own. Even a movie like Lemony Snicket clearly was a very popular series, even though I was only tangentially aware. But this here, I have no clue, you know. And it's either going to be obviously Lemony Snicket or Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, and time will tell. But I have no idea what it's about. And the Golden Compass is I don't know what it is, but it's a terrible title if you're trying to get people if you're trying to get families and young people to come into a series.
I don't know. It doesn't seem that bad to me.
I don't know. The Golden Compass? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of The Golden Child, which was the worst movie ever.
I loved that when I was a kid.
Yeah. Anyway.
I was just reading the latest Penny Arcade book this morning, and there was a joke about Splinter Cell Pandora's Tomorrow, and it was rejected ideas for that game, and it was Splinter Cell Puppy Helmet.
Puppy Helmet?
Splinter. Because it was like, you know, random adjective making fun of Pandora's Tomorrow. Splinter Cell, popcorn eyeglasses, Splinter Cell, peanut butter monkey. It was some pretty funny cover art drawn up. But Puppy Helmet is brilliant. Anyway, so there's a lot of movies that will have a presence there, either in terms of a booth or a whole panel. So that'll be, and I'm really hoping, I am really crossing my fingers that there will be a Futurama panel.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Because the one I went to in 2001 was hysterical. And I think there's also a Star Wars panel to go over their TV projects, like the animated stuff and the live action. That'll be interesting. But it's also, you know, they've got these panels in these 4,000-seat rooms, and I'm having trouble thinking, how do you go to Comic-Con and not want to hear about the Star Wars TV project? That seems like anyone that goes there will automatically want to know about that.
Yeah. Although, I'd be very interested in Comic-Con, and I am totally over Star Wars. I have no interest.
I know.
If it was there, I'd definitely sit through it. But
some of these presentations just seem like everyone will want to be there. Like, why even bother having anything else the same time? Because everyone's going to want to be in this other thing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Anyway, so let's move on as your cat sneezes. I don't really have, I think, too much else movie-wise. I've been keeping up on the sites, but I didn't take any notes to bring here.
I've watched a couple DVDs.
I guess Sicko is out on BitTorrent.
Yeah, geez.
I saw Jeff Wells talk about that. And you know, I am not above, on occasion, somehow obtaining a movie. I'm not going to say any more than that. But I have no desire to torrent Sicko.
Yeah.
When I see it, I want to go in and pay money for it.
Yeah.
And there's not that many movies that I'll say that about, but...
Well, I'm definitely a better person than you, because I've never BitTorrented a movie.
I didn't say I BitTorrented things.
I'm just joking.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have made no such admissions.
But I've never done it just because for whatever reason, actually, I did do one movie. And it was an obscure 1970 movie, a German movie, not even subtitled. And it was directed by a woman who later became... It was directed by this Ulrike Meinhof, and it was set to premiere on German television on May 14th, 1970. But on May 10th, 1970, she broke a convicted arsonist out of prison named Andreas Bader. And so they pulled it from the air. They never played it. And then they finally played it on TV 25 years later. And there's no way you're going to get it. And some generous soul uploaded it to BitTorrent entirely for me, because he taped it and put it on there so other people could download it. But it wasn't the only way I could get a copy of this, was him putting it on BitTorrent.
That's
and I was
funny.
Able to download it. But because it was so rare and obscure, there was like no seeds for it, no nothing. It took me like 7 months to download it, but it took about 5 days for the thing to finally come through. But other than that, given that the copyright holder is a convicted murderer and terrorist, I don't feel so bad taking that one. But anyway, so not much interest in that. Although I just that makes me feel bad for Michael Moore, because...
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, I don't see Michael Moore fans being big downloaders.
No, I agree.
Honestly.
I totally agree.
I don't think it's going to take too much out of his box office.
Yeah, I agree.
It'll take a bit, but anyway.
I can't wait for that movie. Is it next weekend it's coming out?
I honestly have no idea when Sicko is being released.
It's June 29th or whatever.
I didn't know it was that soon, but that's good. I'm excited.
It may not be. It may be later, but I thought it was about now.
Anyway, if we think of movie stuff, we'll interject, but let's move along.
Well, I did watch the movie Wordplay. I found
That's that Will Short one?
Yeah, that Will Short's one. And you know, he's the most annoying part of NPR Sunday mornings, Saturday mornings.
I don't think so.
I don't know. It's not. I like Will Short's. I like everything. But it strains me whenever all of a sudden they do some clue, they bring somebody on, and then they start going through these clues, and I feel compelled to play along. I don't want to play along. I'm forcing myself to play along. They're weird clues, and then it's over, and then they give some guy a mug. And the whole time, it's tension for me, pure tension, because I have to play along, but I don't want to. I want them to get to the next segment where they're talking about the die-off of the bees, or they're talking about the sounds of crickets, or whatever the hell they're talking about.
Weekend edition is a different kettle of fish.
It sure is. So, but anyway, it was a really pretty good movie. They did a good job of focusing on certain characters that are in their crossword puzzles. Did a lot of great interviews with like John Stewart and Bill Clinton and others about their love of the crossword puzzles. And that's basically it. And it was a good movie with no villains, you know, and apparently, you know, when they would show this movie, you'd see a lot of the people in the audience go, this is great, but you didn't really get to the meat. I mean, they're all acting like they liked each other, and the director's going, no, they do. Of course they want to win, but no, they really genuinely like each other, and there's nothing there. And it was kind of cool and refreshing that way. And there was still tension and drama, but it was still exciting and interesting. A surprisingly good movie. It sat there staring, going, do I really want to watch this damn thing? I had it for a couple of weeks, and then I finally watched it and thought, yeah, that was great.
Cool.
Friggin' movie about crossword puzzles.
To answer a question that we raised many, many weeks ago, I read an interview with Brad Bird, who directed the upcoming Ratatouille.
Yep.
And we had said, well, didn't he just make The Incredibles? Isn't usually there a longer cycle between Pixar films before the directors repeat?
Yeah.
They actually brought him, this was more of a troubled production that they brought him in on.
Wow. So who got canned?
I don't know if anyone got canned. It's just, and I don't remember who was directing it before or who was in charge of the project before, but the story elements were not coming together, apparently. So they called in Brad Bird to help, and that's why.
That's the hallmark of them, to get those story elements together at the beginning. Did you see the little preview for Wall-E?
I have seen a shot, and I have seen the, you know, what I know what it's about. I haven't seen anything in motion.
Well, they have a Disney preview trailer, and it has some scenes of it, but it mostly is an interview. They describe it. It's a really interesting marketing thing. It's Lasseter. I think it's Lasseter. And he's saying,
kind of a bigger guy with,
I know what Lasseter is. I just can't remember if it was Lasseter or not. So, but I think it's Lasseter, and they're interviewing him for this trailer in the trailer. And he says, you know, back in 96, and we were just, Toy Story is just coming out, and we sat down and said, you know, we can do more of this stuff. And we sat down in a restaurant and we outlined the ideas for a bunch of movies. And through that one meeting in the restaurant, we came up with the idea for A Bug's Life, for Toy Story 2, for Finding Nemo, for, and then there was one other one or whatever, and this one, Wall-E. And of course, not Cars, because Cars came, was separate, and then not Incredibles, which was separate. But it was kind of interesting the way they were talking about, they talk about the people who are in this meeting and how they planned out movies that later generated about $5 billion in revenue and are beloved or whatever. So anyway, that was what they were trying. It was an interesting ad because they were trying to, it's funny because it's the kind of ad that you would see that if they had a bunch of troubled productions other than these core productions, and they were trying to, like, say, you know, I know these last ones haven't been that great, but this one's going to be like those first ones you love so much. The irony is the last ones are just as great as the other ones. Yeah. Incredibles and Cars are great. But anyway, so it was really interesting, and it's about some robot, and they just had some test footage, and it's hard to know what it's about, but it's a good look. And the thing about every trailer I've ever seen for a Pixar movie, I've always thought they sucked. And it's not because of the trailer, it's because Pixar movies you have to get into, and the short, like the humor I see in them, it never strikes me as funny, but in the movie, they're really funny in the context. So this one here seemed as good as any. That said, Ratatouille, the actual trailer, I actually really did laugh, and I thought it looked great, and I was excited to see it. So anyway, the look of this Wall-E, there's a couple scenes in there, and it just looks extremely rich and photorealistic in a way that other movies haven't quite been as much. So anyway, it looks interesting.
The one other thing that's coming out in early July, Sunshine. You heard about this?
I think I've heard about it. What's it about?
It's 50 years in the future. It's a sci-fi film. 50 years in the future, the sun is dying.
Oh,
and
no.
They send this ship to go reignite it.
The sun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just, I All right, never mind. I won't go.
No, I'm just trying to picture.
It's what? By the same guy who did 28 Days.
Oh, that would be cool. Danny Boyle. Got,
yeah, it's a Danny okay. Boyle.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about this. No, that sounds great. I'm just trying to picture.
I guess it's been floating around sort of in the ether for a while.
Because when you've seen those things where they show the literal size of the sun in comparison to the size of the earth, and trying to picture anything humans could do that could in any way have any effect. The literal size of the sun, it's like a basketball versus like a molecule is the size of the earth.
I totally agree. And
but if they, you know, 28 days, I didn't have any problem with.
I finally saw the trailer this week, and I thought it was really compelling, and I want to see this film.
He's a very good director.
So, and you know, we assume that the science is,
yep,
is plausible enough that it won't trip you up.
Yep.
Okay. So what else is there? So some Mac happenings.
Yeah.
They finally revised the MacBook Pro. Yeah. I still want to call it a PowerBook. They new architecture, new way of backlighting the screens, and they bumped up.
Oh, really?
Some
I didn't hear about that.
Instead of
is it going to save electric?
It's LED versus CFL, I think.
Oh, so is that going to save power so they can battery?
It's more on? Environmentally friendly. It's
everybody's
brighter.
Just waiting for the OLED thing technology to mature because that will cost.
But they're having.
Well, no, if it does.
OLED itself is still having problems. A similar technology may come out that eclipses it.
Yeah.
Like
but
the
if they,
bendable paper
yeah,
stuff.
But the key is if they do that, that's going to, because that's where your power goes in those laptops is like running that big-ass bright light.
So. Well, that and.
And hard drive.
Yeah.
But other than that, not much. I mean, it's.
Well, I think the processors are actually. I mean, processor. Because that's. Well, processor also generates the heat.
Yep.
And so, anyway.
What'd you think of his keynote at the developers conference?
I thought it was okay. Showed off a lot of. I've listened to a lot of commentary on the keynote.
Yeah.
Between MacBreak Weekly and This Week in Media and. All these other things.
I haven't heard any of that. I haven't read any of that. What are they saying?
That the God, now I have to remember. It's been a dense couple
of
weeks.
Watching the keynote, I really liked a lot of what he was showing off in the hell is it Leopard.
Yeah.
I liked a lot of that stuff. I mean, it's really cool. Although I saw some commentary on the Windows sites going, "Hey, they're all so excited because it's always been." The Windows showing off something that Mac was doing like 5 years before, and they all decided all the new stuff he shows in Leopard, you can already do in Windows. And I'm thinking, only a retard would look at how that's implemented in Windows and compare it to what he's doing in Mac. He's basically creating an interface that is heavily dependent on processing power. But if you have that processing power, it's beautiful, like the pull and get through stuff. Now, what I thought was interesting when he finally got to the developers portion of it and his one more thing, and he talked about being able to develop apps for the iPhone, and you could just hear a collective groan almost in the audience because basically he's saying, yes, okay, you can develop apps, but they're basically you can develop rich websites if well, they work on Safari, and I know they wanted something a lot more than that because you can only kind of do very limited stuff like calling up phones, calling up other stuff. It was
I don't know, you can do a surprising amount with a good website.
You can, but the developers were looking for about a million times more. I mean, they just were.
I think maybe a million is Richard overstating it a little bit.
Oh, for God's sakes, how obvious could it be? Do you need to point out that it's overstating
million
it?
Times
had more. I said 800 times more, then you could say Richard overstating a little bit. A million times, it's rather
the
obvious.
The consensus I got, or one thing that was pointed out that was then agreed to by the others, was that if you look at some of the other Mac products,
yep.
Or similar products, and they had a good example, but now I'm blanking on what it was, they waited to like the second version to get the development kits out there.
Yeah.
So that could easily be that there will be a more robust development environment.
That's true.
They're just waiting to work the kinks out themselves or whatever. For whatever reason, that doesn't mean that the limitations that exist now will always be there.
Yeah.
And I fully go along with that. And then they talk about, usually when they talk about the iPhone on the shows I listen to, they then bring up, Windows Mobile or whatever, you know, the Nokia phones or whatever, and say, you know what, though? I have to reboot my damn phone six times a day,
yeah,
or it will actually crash in the middle of a call.
Yeah,
so,
if you're talking about Windows Mobile, I mean, it's just a horrible, horrible technology that had so much promise that they didn't deliver on. And I look at the iPhone as going, I'm going to be willing to bet nobody's ever going to be rebooting these things, or it'd be so rare. It's just going to work, basically. That said, there's no frickin' way that I don't even remotely have the money, and plus it's, you know, it's locked into the one, the singular, and I can't do it. So I will be excited, because when it comes out in a week, because that means 2 years from now, I will be buying a really good version of it for much cheaper when I can afford it, and it can be on the AT&T the Verizon network. Cause that's when I'll be getting it.
I thought their exclusivity was longer than 2 years.
I thought it was 2 years. Maybe I'm wrong on that.
I think the contract is 2 years.
Oh, you mean their exclusivity is longer than that?
Maybe.
What were they thinking?
I don't know. They made a deal. It's not like, whatever.
Maybe it's just for the preliminary iPhone and any new version, but I doubt it. Well, anyway, needless to say, I'm my cell phone usage is tied to my work. In my work, I am not going to change everybody at work over so I can get an iPhone. So, even though I have that power, I'm not going to wield it.
That's funny. No news for Apple TV. No news on high-def downloads for iTunes. No news on a BitTorrent client built into Leopard. These are the things that would be of interest to entertainment people. I want a new MacBook Pro, but as we suddenly look at how much money we have an offer on the old house.
Yep.
And we have the inspection next week. So if it goes through, the actual cash we'll have on hand afterwards is a lot less than we were hoping.
Yeah.
So suddenly things like new laptop, oh, I guess we can't afford that now. Yeah. Have to afford things like new water heater.
Yep. So what are you playing video games? I saw you were playing Forza.
Yeah, well, first, I've been doing all Lego Star Wars.
Yeah, how's that going?
Pretty good. I finally got through all the basic missions.
I know you had that great experience. I've been to four different stores. I just thought, I may go get a video game, where all four stores do not have Lego Star Wars. Not a one of them. So it's like they've released the Platinum, but you were lucky because they probably sent a message out, get rid of all the old ones. But literally, I've been to two Fred Meyers, two GameStops, no Lego Star Wars.
Have you heard of the internet?
Well, I just wanted to pick something up. So, and I did. I picked up Ghost Recon for $9.99.
Oh, wow.
Was used. And because it's already like a $20 game, the used version's $10 or whatever. So I picked that up.
Okay, well, that's good value for your dollar.
Yeah.
No, I was playing a lot of. I got through the series. Now I kind of have to go back and do the. They let you. There's like story mode, and then there's free play mode where you go back and you have access to the areas you didn't have the first time, so you can collect more bits of stuff.
Yep.
It's still pretty fun. But then on Friday night, I finally got my copy of Forza, which happened because another friend of mine. Because I was going to get it through a friend who works at Microsoft.
Yep.
And I was just going to wait until it came to the MS store, and then I would pay $25 for it, because I didn't want to pay $60 for it.
Yep.
And then a friend calls me up a week or so ago and says, have you bought Forza yet? I said, no. He says, all right, I'm buying you a copy. I ordered mine. It's not here yet. I need to play it tonight, so I'm going to buy a copy.
Nice.
When mine shows up, you can just have this one.
Wow.
I was like, wow. You understand, the reason I don't have it yet is because I'm cheap,
yes.
Not because I can't afford it.
I envy you and your cheapness, because I try to be cheap, but I'm not.
Well, it's also that, A, I have this Lego game that when I actually have time to play video games, which is rare, I can play that. It's like I don't... Anyway. So
well, I've been swamped with work, but I did, like, yesterday start playing that Ghost Recon, and it was funny because I... got it, and I only got it because I know you had played, and you said it was pretty good, and it's similar to what I like. I love sniper games, so and lone wolf kind of games, and you, even though this is with a team, you can basically play it lone wolf and send your guys running elsewhere, which I love. But anyway, so I played it, and I was trying to figure out when I was playing it what kind of review it would have gotten, because, you know, it's weird. It's so it's really disturbing to me to play through a game and see typos. And there's two typos that I knew specifically, like regroup is regoop. And there was another one that they did it, which I'm always stunned by, like a typo. How could they do that? And then there's like little bugs in there, like when you're crawling on the ground, your character like pops up and like flies. Which was bizarre.
I didn't notice any of these things.
This happened to me, and then and it automatically downloads whatever update, so it'd have to be there. And then there was one other thing about and then a couple of the missions, just the game. It's good gameplay, but it's maddening in other levels because you have to play through these missions, and there's various checkpoints. And you either are fully, you know, green, you know, healthy, then yellow, and then red. And if you're red and you get to the next checkpoint, then you're stuck at red. Yeah. You have to start from the beginning. And honest to God, I can see why they're doing it. But at a certain point, make that for the hard people. For the other ones, do something easier, because it's actually maddening. You literally have to go back to the beginning. And had you known that, you would have stopped right then and there, instead of at the fourth checkpoint to realize, crap, I just want to go to the last checkpoint. It's actually quite maddening, even though it's not the toughest game in the world. So I was saying it's good in certain areas. I'd give it like about a 6.5 or something. And then I go, and the frigging game is like 9.5. It's like the greatest thing ever. It's clearly like a first generation, we love this game and it's a deal breaker. But I could not. It just did not seem that great to me.
I agree with you on the health checkpoint thing, but other than that, I quite enjoyed my experience.
I'm enjoying it too. The checkpoint thing is, you know, I guess I come from the PC world, because the PC world, first of all, PC world, every game, it's almost always save anywhere. You, wherever you're going, unless it's like a certain mild mission-based one, if you're on something like that, you're able to save and go back and regroup. Now, you may only have like 4 or 5 saves that you can have, but you can save anywhere. So you end up getting mad. You end up getting used to that. So that's a little maddening. And there's many times in the PC world where they literally will dock a game, you know, 80 or 30% just because of its maddening save scheme. So that's where I'm coming from. But anyway, I do like it. And having played it, I'm going, oh, great. Now that I'm getting done with this, the second one is out, and it's like $30. I can see it. There's places. So I'm, you know, it's like, cool. I'm getting used to this game, and I can immediately jump into another one, which is cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's coming out in the not-too-distant future, but let's see. We're in June, mid-June. I've got Forza, which will keep me occupied for a while. And then the next one I know that I want is Halo, end of September. And then they finally announced a release date for Half-Life of October.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day.
And then you'll have Grand Theft Auto 4.
The thing about Half-Life, which is so incredible, is that every once I'll play a game, and then I'll have a memory of playing a section of another game, and I'll go, oh, yeah, that was in Half-Life. And then I'll play a different game, and I'll have a memory and go, oh, no, it's a different game. Then I'll realize it's Half-Life. Half-Life is the best game I've ever played, bar none. It's the best game ever. And it was, but it was so rich and so varied. And I look and I realize, damn. I mean, I can't remember how long it took, but it might have taken me 40, 50 hours to get through the whole thing. And it was great the whole way through. It was so great. And then there were still things at the very end of it that, like they transform some of your guns and other stuff you're using, and it's so great and so exciting. You want to like call somebody up and tell somebody, dude, the gun can do this now. I mean, it's so great that I'm excited for that, just because screw it, I'm going to get Half-Life again and play through it again. I'll see what the experience is like on the Xbox, but it's such a great, great game, you know? Anyway, truly, truly great game.
I don't really think I have anything else.
I will probably get Halo, but I don't know. The little Crackdown thing, the multiplayer didn't excite me. But I played Halo, the Xbox version, on my Xbox 360, and I didn't actually even finish it. But it was okay. I mean, I don't honestly think it was like the greatest thing ever. But I think the greatest thing ever is because of the multiplayer stuff, not the first person. To me, for the its first person is too much shoot things a million times kind of thing, and Half-Life and others are more, shoot them a couple times and they're down and don't get hit. It's not taking millions of bullets. Mm-hmm. And I'm more into that than, although Ghost Recon's really tough because it's like two or three bullets and you're dead. I'm more into that than the Halo, but I should enjoy it. I mean, I can't imagine them doing anything less than something really great with that franchise. So
God, well, I cannot wait until I'm all moved in and I've got this free time again. Mm-hmm. That'll be really exciting.
Nice.
After we're done here, I have to go scrape off popcorn ceiling.
That sounds like fun.
And maybe repaint today.
I was going to mow today, mow the 18 inches of grass out there, or maybe even higher, but it rained last night. It's going to be even tougher. I'll have to weed whack it down.
Yeah, you got quite a forest.
I haven't mowed since winter. Just too busy and didn't have enough money for a lawnmower blade or whatever. I was just so broke, but I'm doing better now. Although my clutch is dead in my car. We have to replace this clutch. That's killing me.
I was told you had the opportunity to replace your clutch when you replaced your transmission.
Well, the opportunity, it would be like when we replaced the transmission, that was costing me $500, of which I had $200. So I had the opportunity to spend another $300, which I didn't have. So it's not an opportunity. The person who's suggesting that opportunity should probably recognize that there was no money. And given that to buy this clutch, basically here was how that opportunity is presented. We pull out the transmission. Oh, we should probably replace the clutch. Okay, and we have to do this all in one day. This clutch, just to get it for $250, takes a week to get it. So there's not much of an opportunity there, and anybody that would suggest otherwise needs to pull their head out of their stinky brown ass.
I'm not going to pass that along.
Okay.
Mr. God. All right. I think I don't have anything else. Do you have anything
else? I have nothing. I have nothing. I'm done.
We will at some point get back on a regular schedule and have notes again and whatnot.
I know. And I got to figure out the Skype thing. Definitely figure out the Skype thing.
Or, we might be able to do something with iChat. Obviously, not till we both have new Macs, but...
Yeah, iChat would work. I really liked that. Honestly, I thought that iChat thing in his developers conference, I thought it was cool.
Well, actually, that's sort of the podcast I listened to. They were sort of holding that up as saying, this isn't getting a lot of attention, but if you look at what's going on with iChat, really impressive.
It was really good, and I'll tell you, the best thing ever. I'm stunned. It never even occurred to me. But rather than try to, they did basically a blue screen technology. But the way the blue screen is you get out of the way of your camera, have it take a still image so it knows the background. So assuming your computer doesn't move, it's just going to pull that out of the scene. It worked really well. I was like, wow, that makes sense. But they had all kinds of effects, and it was dumb, but good.
Well, these guys aren't talking about the effects. They're talking about the ability to share stuff.
Yeah, and the rest of that, and that stuff they've had a lot in the Windows world, but not as part of Windows, and clearly not as smooth as this with it, which is just literally collaborative whiteboards, but also literally just sharing these items. Here it is. I'm showing it to you. You can open it up. I'm opening it up with you. You're seeing it. Mm-hmm. Here's the actual item.
Right.
You can get it. It's good technology. Ironically, that kind of stuff usually goes over way better on the Windows world because of the... what you're using it for, but it was good technology. It was really good, and it's Apple is such an awesome company, and it makes me wish even more I had money. If I somehow got a windfall of like $10,000, I'd put $5,000 of it away, and I'd put $2,000 towards a Mac, and then $3,000 on other stuff. But I don't have any windfalls coming down the pike anytime soon. Anyway, it's exactly 60 minutes. So let's wrap up.
You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com is how you contact us. And I am Matt.
I'm Richard.
Thank you for listening.
A bientôt. Let me just hit the red here.